Next speaker is, thank you very much, by the way, is Kira. And would you like to introduce yourself?
My name, if I'm not speaking loudly enough, tell me to shout. My name is Kira McNeil and I'm a GP. I work just up the road in the north inner city of Dublin. And I'd like to just briefly describe how general practice is structured and funded in Ireland, and hopefully through that illustrate how the structure and funding of general practice in Ireland perpetuates what's known as health inequality. So basically in Ireland there are about 2,500 GPs. That works out at roughly one GP per 1,200 patients, except in areas that are deprived. It's hard to find GPs to work in those areas, so on average there's one GP per 1,500 to 1,800 patients. So in poorer areas the resources are worse than in wealthier areas. General practice in Ireland now is mostly operates through group practices, or in some areas where the primary healthcare strategy has been developed, there are what are known as primary care centres. So basically GPs work in groups, they usually work with a nurse and they have some administrative staff. General practice functions effectively as a small business. The funding comes to the GP and the GP uses that funding to pay the other members of staff who work with the GP and to pay for all the overheads. So how are GPs funded? They're funded either from the state or privately. So there are four main ways in which the state funds general practice. The main and most significant one is the medical card scheme, or the GMS contract. And you'll know the medical card scheme. That's basically about 29% of the population are entitled to and have medical cards, and a GP has a state contract to provide care for those patients and receives funding through what's called capitation. Basically, that's a set amount of money per patient per year. So that's roughly about 60 euros for a child under four. That's what a GP gets paid to look after that child for a year. And it's about 700 euros for a patient over 70. So that's set regardless of how often the patient comes in to see. So that's the main source of state funding. Other ways in which GPs are funded by the state would be GPs are paid to look after pregnant women, GPs are paid to vaccinate children, GPs are paid to provide certificates if a PAYE worker gets sick, a GP is paid to certify that fact. So that's the state funding. Private funding is everything else. Anyone who doesn't have a medical card and seeks a service from a GP has to pay for that directly. So as you can see, the number of times a private patient attends, they pay each time. So the amount of work a GP does is proportionate to their pay in the private sector. It's not in the public sector. Just to clarify, the phrase two-tier health system is used a lot to describe how people access secondary care but not primary care. The division in primary care really is, do you have a medical card or do you not? So that division is separate to what is described as the two-tier health system. So if you look at that as the structure and the funding, that helps to inform how health inequalities are perpetuated by that system. So when I use that phrase, what do I mean? Basically, over the last 40 years, and a lot of research has confirmed the fact that poor people experience worse health than rich people. Now, that expands from the time you're in the womb till the time you die. If you're born and raised in a poor area, you will be sicker than someone in a rich area. And examples of that, research was done in Ireland in 2001 that confirmed that mortality rates for the poorest in Ireland are 100% higher than the richest. That's all cause, and also cardiovascular, respiratory, all types of cancer. So you're twice as likely to die if you're from a poor area as if you're from a rich area. So just to show how that, so common sense should tell you most funding should go to the sickest people, whereas in fact the opposite happens. And I'll try and describe it more clearly by looking at four individuals from different backgrounds to access services in different ways and show how that impacts on their health. So we'll take John, who's a 44-year-old man who's unemployed, he's a father of two. Because he's unemployed, he's entitled to a Medicare card. So he is able to access primary care for free. So that's great. John gets gout, so he goes in to visit his GP. I have a sore ankle. His GP works in a deprived area, so is funded to look after John in terms of the illness he brings into him. He's not funded to practice any type of preventative health. So while the doctor looking after John knows he has gout, I know that John's from a poor area, so I know he's twice as likely to die of heart disease as someone from a rich area, but I don't have the resources to provide the preventative care to make a difference. I can give him advice. I can recommend that he comes in and gets his cholesterol checked. I can advise him to get checked for diabetes. I can tell him to eat well and exercise. I know he has limited ability to carry out these actions because of his social background, and I have to ask him to pay for me to provide those services. So he may feel well looked after because I manage his gout, but I don't do anything to prevent the fact that he's going to die twice. He's twice as likely to die as someone from a rich area. So that's someone who has a medical card. Then, and this is an area that's very close to my heart because I look after a lot of patients in this situation, there are the people who are just richer than can access medical cards. So those people are the most vulnerable. That's someone who earns basically more than 180 euros there or thereabouts a week. They're not entitled to a medical card, but when you consider that most GP costs are somewhere between 40 and 60 euros a pop, if that person has children and a wife and is trying to manage a home and that, basically that person doesn't come to the doctor. So that I don't even know that that patient exists. They're only my responsibility if they come in to me, they're not if they don't. So can I look after that person and can I prevent the fact that they're twice as likely to die as someone from a rich area? If I don't even know they exist, I can't do anything about them. So how that man accesses health is in crisis situations, when he presents to A&E with a heart attack, when he presents to A&E with an accident. His wife may drag him into me on one occasion, but the likelihood of him following up is very small because he can't afford to come to the GP. So that's a poor person who doesn't have a medical card. Then we have a rich person. Now, I'm sorry for keeping it so simple, but it's just an illustrative point. So someone who is wealthy is less likely to be ill, but is more likely to be able to afford to visit their GP and is more likely to be able to access preventative health. Because GPs working in wealthier areas have more, basically primary care is better funded because they get paid each time, they get paid for the work that they do, and they're more likely to be able to practice preventative health. That patient is more likely to live, well, it's twice as likely as someone from a poor area to live to over 70, and once they reach the ripe old age of 70, they get given a medical card just because of the fact that they reached 70, even if they can still afford to pay the GP. So I hope that illustrates in some way what I mean.